Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Liberia is expected to be charged today, Wednesday.
He said the 23 counts unofficially. One is murder. Second is criminal conspiracy, largely making false statements before the law enforcement officer.
We'll speak with Liberia's information minister about a news conference also scheduled for today, Wednesday. Refugees in eastern DRC called for assistance. Over 4 million people in Kenya face severe food insecurity. And we also hear about a Kenyan refugee turned journalist. Sierra Leoneans work to fight misinformation as the country votes this Saturday, June 24. And the U.S. sanctions a South Sudanese military officer and a governor for the rape of hundreds of women and girls.
These particular rapes that have been called out by these sanctions are only one piece of the many, many human rights violations that have been happening in South Sudan since independence.
And President Biden's son to plead guilty to criminal charges. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Liberian National Police is expected to hold a news conference today, Wednesday, to provide what they are calling a significant update on their investigation into the death of Ms. Charlo Musu at the home of Gloria Musu Scott, the former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Liberia. There was an armed attack on the former Chief Justice's home in February and the stabbing death of her foster daughter. Musu Scott told VOA in March this year that the attack on her home was an attempt to assassinate her. Information Minister Ledger Hu Rennie tells me the government has completed its investigation, including forensics, and will announce the results at Wednesday's news conference.
Where we are at the moment is that they've been held overnight at a police station in continuation of the investigation involving the death of little Charlo Musu that occurred at the former Chief Justice's residence a few months ago. And so the investigation is continuing. And it is my understanding that the police is now wrapping up this investigation to see exactly whether or not they can press formal charges or, you know, provide the public an update as to what they want to do next.
So right now, as we speak, where is the former Chief Justice?
As far as I know, the former Chief Justice is at the Liberia National Police Headquarters in Monrovia. That's where she's been held overnight until the formal updates from the police, as we have announced, that will be held tomorrow at a major news conference by the police involving the Ministry of Information, the Ministry of Justice, and the police to the public. Let's wait until the police provide all of us with its update and findings.
It was in March this year that I spoke with the former Chief Justice after the incident at her home, and she was indicating that she thought she was being made a scapegoat.
Well, people have the right to think of how they want to think and speak of any ongoing investigation. But we as a government, have to do our work, too. It's been 3 months down the line and we've been continuing with this investigation. The police has been doing a very thorough investigation involving international partners, doing some forensics involving our international friends far and wide. So the investigation is now concluding, and I think the police believe that they have some findings to provide to the public tomorrow. And so let's wait and see what their findings are and how they're going to proceed going forward with this matter.
Ledger Hood, thank you very much again. A pleasure to speak with you always.
Thank you, James.
Ledger Hood Renning is Liberia's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. In Liberia, former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Gloria Musu Scott, and three members of her family are expected to be charged today, Wednesday, with murder, criminal conspiracy, and making false statements to law enforcement officers. In March this year, Counselor Musu Scott told VOA that she was concerned the police were trying to make her a scapegoat for an alleged attack by armed men on her home and the stabbing death of her foster daughter. Justice Scott said then that the assault was actually an attempt to assassinate her. Counselor Augustine Fayia is a member of Justice Musu Scott's defense team. He tells me that the former Chief Justice was turned over to the police on Tuesday morning.
I don't have official confirmation from the legal team that she speaks to the press, most especially the international press, but I can tell you this much, that we carry on the police to this morning upon the request by the police and they have all detained.
The police say why they are detaining her?
Yes, they said the 203 count unofficially. One is murder, second is criminal conspiracy, lastly, making false statements before the law enforcement officers.
And this is in connection with what?
Well, it is in connection with the case that he reported. He was disturbed three times on one occasion. Her lesson plate were pulled out from her car, and she reported that officially before the Liberian National Police. To the best of our knowledge, there has been no official investigation to that matter. They have been laying down. And the second was an attack on her house. Then the following day, and other attacks. All these incidents were reported to the Liberian National Police. To the best of our knowledge, there has been no investigation into those matters. The last was where people, I mean, someone entered her house, and according to information from her and the occupants, somebody died. The police, in their best judgment, there was no tampering, nobody entered the house. And so the council, in the manner informed, they have done.
I spoke with Councillor Musu's cat in March this year, and she indicated that she thought that she was being framed. How do you think she's going to plead?
Well, I am aware that from the way she confided in me, she had done nothing. And so her plea would be not guilty, not at all. Her conduct does not amount to guilt. To amount to guilt in criminal justice, there must be a criminal culpability, and that must be your individual action, individual and collective action, in the manner informed they are citing them for conspiracy. That does not exist as far as their estimation, their narrative to all is concerned.
Where is the counselor now? Has she posted a bill?
She is in police detention, along with other members of her family.
What I mean, are there any attempts for bail?
Well, we have not seen any attempt by people to file bail at the Liberia National Police. Throughout, they have been cooperating with all. They have been signing for all at the end of their funding because she was a complainant. But today, it took a different tone. Today, she became a defendant. Maybe the investigation will start anew.
What is the process?
The bail is the subject matter of the court. Police don't grant bail for people. They don't have that authority. But they have the authority to use their discretion to allow a member of the family or a lawyer to sign for them. But to grant bail for you to go, that is not within their authority. They don't have that authority. It is not within their purview. And under the law, you cannot assume what is not expressly or implied given to you. So they cannot grant bail. But they have the discretion to tell any member of the family or the lawyer to sign for them to appear when they need them. We have been cooperating with them as complainants.
Augustine Fayia is a member of former Liberian Chief Justice Gloria Musu's defense team. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. June 24 is a significant day in Sierra Leone as voters head to the polls to decide who will lead them for the next 5 years. Social media and other news outlets are important players in the drive to influence the outcome and as is a new method to guarantee that accurate information gets to the electorate. Reporter Eric Kawa has more from Freetown.
With the current trends in technology, the social media plays a significant role in campaigning as Sierra Leoneans prepare to go to the polls. However, there are many concerns about the effects of fake news, misinformation, and hate speech during the electoral cycle. In response, a fact-checking initiative known as iVerify has been established to mitigate the information threats before, during, and after the vote. The initiative was born out of efforts by the Sierra Leone Association of Journalists and the Independent Radio Network with support from the United Nations Development Programme and the BBC Media Action. Marian Bangura is a fact-checker at iVerify.
We use some of our software that has been already programmed and which will take us directly to the platform. We have those tools that one will check for photos because we see people go about doing this Photoshop. So we have tools that we use that can fact check and screen those photos if they're actually the real photos or the fake ones. At the end of it all, then we have our true source with regards photos as well and even messages and sometimes videos as well.
Bangura further explains that information that has been thoroughly fact-checked and cross-checked for accuracy is disseminated on their website, social media platforms, and the independent radio network, IRN, which is made up of over 50 radio stations in Sierra Leone. Ahmed Sahid Nasrallah, the president of the Sierra Leone Association of Journalists, says fake news, misinformation, and hate speech is a challenge for journalists.
It is hugely undermining the work that we do as professional journalists, because now we see a lot of Sierra Leoneans now on social media have access to the internet as opposed to the 2018 elections. Partly what they are doing is making people lack trust in the media. Inasmuch this social media is posing a challenge, according to the studies that have been done, especially the one by UBC Media, there is a general understanding from the public that there's a lack of trust for social media, yes, but then they will look up to traditional media to get the correct news and verified information.
Nasrallah further explains that Sierra Leone is among the few countries in Africa to use the iVerify platform. With a few days to the polls, many Sierra Leoneans are looking forward to peaceful elections as they remain glued to their technological devices. iVerify and media professionals say they hope that information will be cross-checked and fact-checked before sharing. For VOA Africa, I am Eric Kawa in Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Listening to Daybreak Africa and the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 21st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The United States on Tuesday imposed sanctions on a South Sudanese military officer and a governor responsible for the rape of hundreds of women and girls. James Nando, a major general in the South Sudanese army, is accused of overseeing forces that violently assaulted women and girls between 2018 and 2021. The U.S. Treasury Department said Nando knew the abuses were occurring and did nothing to stop them or punish the men that committed the crimes. The Treasury also named Western Equatorial Governor Alfred Futuyo in the documents. Futuyo, who is affiliated with the Sudan People's Liberation Movement Army, is said to have carried out multiple attacks in his state that led to the abductions and gang rapes of hundreds of civilians. Rebecca Hamilton is international law professor at American University and former journalist who covered Sudan and South Sudan for the Washington Post. She tells viewers Carol Van Damme that she finds it extremely significant that the sanctions will call out sexual violence against women and girls.
Historically, the typical scenario is that you will have sanctions issues that may well include sanctions for people who have used sexual violence as a weapon of war, but that hasn't been highlighted in the statement that is made about the sanctions. So I think that is what is significant about what the administration has done this time. But this needs to happen within a much bigger conversation in South Sudan about justice and accountability writ large. These particular rapes that have been called out by these sanctions are only one piece of the many, many human rights violations that have been happening in South Sudan since independence. And there was calls from the very beginning from civil society to get transitional justice mechanisms in place that we still are yet to see.
These women have been, like you mentioned, mistreated and abused for years by these people who have powerful positions and with impunity. Does this really change anything?
So I don't think that we should dismiss the significance of the sanctions, because what they mean is that at least for these two men, they are unable to access U.S. assets, property. And what is interesting to me about these particular sanctions on these particular people is that we have the United Kingdom making the same move at the same time. So what has happened in the past is that the US will issue some sanctions, but there'll be a workaround that people can do by going to another financial market. So the coordination, I think, is helpful in making these sanctions actually stick. And for a lot of the men, and it is primarily men in positions of power in South Sudan, and I should say not only South Sudan, but they have enjoyed the benefits of being able to have offshore resources, of sending their kids to private schools in the US or the UK. And so they really directly feel the pinch with actions like these sanctions. But again, this is one piece of the accountability puzzle. It is meaningful. It will hurt. But there needs to be, I think, criminal accountability as well for these clear violations of international human rights and international criminal law.
When you say this is one piece of the puzzle, there should be criminal actions, how would criminal actions play out?
So there is a very live debate happening in South Sudan over how much of this should be done through domestic courts getting into operation, whether there should be moves by the International Criminal Court. There are many, many ways that this could go, but right now we're starting from a baseline where there has been no accountability for any of the violations that have happened since the country gained independence.
That's Rebecca Hamilton, international law professor at American University in Washington, D.C. She was speaking to my colleague Carol Van Dam from New Zealand. According to UNICEF, over 4 million people in Kenya face severe food insecurity. VOA's Omari Kaseko visited a family impacted by five seasons of severe drought in the north.
How Aden's desperate efforts to get medical attention for her grandson led her to this referral hospital in Wajir, Kenya. She's been to several other health facilities, but because she lost everything due to drought, Adena says she cannot afford medical care in the capital city.
I have been told this child has a swollen liver and I should take him to Nairobi, but I don't have money to take him to Nairobi. We can barely afford breakfast for the children.
Over 30 million people in the Horn of Africa face threats to their livelihood as a result of a climate crisis, mass displacement, and prolonged conflict. According to the United Nations, northern Kenya is facing a prolonged drought.
The main problem currently we are facing was delayed presentation. They come in advanced stage where minimal can be done.
Abdul Karim Abey brought his child to Wajir Hospital.
At the
Abey says he has not yet lost a family member, but the situation is grim.
Water trucks come once every 3 weeks, but the water we use is salty. We cannot be used for drinking. We can't do anything unless God gives us rain and His mercy.
Dr. Yusuf says malnutrition is prevalent.
In an average normal day, about 30 to 40% of our world is malnutrition. And now where we have drought, during floods, during extreme cases, we get a huge number, close to 20 cases of malnutrition in the world.
Nuria Mumin brought her son to this hospital.
I came here because my child was very sick. He had difficulty breathing. He lacks nutrients and he doesn't breastfeed well. I traveled from Bajaja for 2 hours. This child is like this because he lacks nutrients.
After years of little rain, much of the Horn of Africa has faced torrential downpours in the spring of 2023, resulting in flash flooding and additional deaths. Omari Kaseko, VOA News.
Rwandan and Burundian refugees in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo are living in difficult conditions, partly due to a lack of assistance from humanitarian organizations. As the international community this week marks World Refugee Day, rights activists are calling on Congolese authorities and others to come to their aid. Zainab Nanti Zaide spoke to refugees and sent us this report from Goma, the capital of North Kivu province.
Phone. Nizeimana Vivian is a Burundian refugee who has lived in the Democratic Republic of Congo for 10 years. But the area Eastern Territory of Rutshuru in North Kivu province, where she first found refuge, is not secure, so she went to the Bulengo camp for displaced people. She says she receives no assistance, which makes her vulnerable to countless illnesses. She says she already has high blood pressure and diabetes. She says normally she should be on diet, but nobody helps her. Here in DRC, she doesn't have any uncles or aunts. There is no family to support her. Many refugees living in the DRC have little or no assistance. To cope with the situation, some try small business to support their families. Furaha, a Rwandan refugee, has leaned to sew, which seems to be helping a bit, despite the problems encountered during her training. She says they have trouble earning a living because they do not have any fields to grow food her. So when they have, for example, 5,000 francs, about $2, they can receive return or money from a shared credit scheme of about 2,000 francs. With this support, they can get credit and buy food like flour in bulk to resell and earn a profit. Refugee rights organizations are calling on DRC authorities and humanitarian organizations to aid of refugees. Kulihoshi Musikane is a refugee rights defender. He says refugees must be included in all existing humanitarian insurance policies. It is deplorable that the issue of refugees has not been addressed by many humanitarian groups. Kulihoshi says they should be reassured that migrants and asylum seekers from neighboring Rwanda, with which the DRC has sometimes tense relations, are not a security risk. In May, the United Nations organized a meeting between the authorities of the DRC and Rwanda to facilitate the possible voluntary repatriation of Congolese and Rwandan refugees to their countries of origin. However, some of them say they have security concerns and are reluctant to return home. For VOA Africa, I'm Zane Mneti Zaidi in Goma.
A son of U.S. President Joe Biden has reached a tentative agreement with federal prosecutors in which he is to admit to several crimes. Details from U.S. Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
According to court papers filed on Tuesday, Hunter Biden is to plead guilty to a pair of charges of failing to pay income taxes and will enter a behavioral diversion program to keep him out of prison on a more serious charge involving illegal ownership of a gun at a time he was regularly using crack cocaine. The White House is not directly commenting on the charges in the case, which has become politicized. Some Republican lawmakers have sought to link the wrongdoing of Biden's son to the president, accusing them of corrupt business ties. They have also alleged the Justice Department, due to political pressure, is avoiding charging Hunter Biden with more serious crimes, which the White House and prosecutors deny. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
And that's it for this Wednesday, June 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a very good day.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday, on the Voice of America.